afternoon, committee. Good afternoon, those who are here. Today and tomorrow will be the days that we will accept amendments to 3120. If you have amendments after that date, it's going to be tough, because we have to give this committee time to study those amendments and their effects on the bill, etc. So, with that, I guess throw it up to Representative Ackerman.
Well, I just want to state, Mr. Chair, that I think we need some exceptions regarding the filing of amendments. I don't think we're far enough into this act to really understand and anticipate all of the issues that are here. I think that as we proceed, it's likely that amendments could easily evolve. I just think we're going to have a very, very imperfect product unless we have some greater leeway on amendments. Maybe amendments will be submitted by the committee only rather than public or some other way. But we're coming in at the end of the session and trying to do something in 1 month the Senate couldn't do in 5 or 6. I feel very, very constrained I guess depressed in a way that we're not going to be able to get the best product out if we can't have some more amendments submitted.
Well, I think that's a very good point. Our problem is that everybody who didn't get their bill out of the Senate is now planning an amendment to this bill to get it through the House. And we have to put an end to that somewhere along the line here, or we'll never get to the meat of what we have to do. I'm willing certainly to not say no more amendments, but we'll give the warning to everybody that it better be a good one after Tuesday. How's that? Does that comfort you?
Yeah, I guess who submits the amendment, but no, there's some latitude. Let me just give you an example of some of the just one consequence that I discussed with Glenn Klein of the city attorney of the city of Eugene. If there's a order or a judgment to pay compensation, and let's say if that's resolved, a judgment against the city or the county, and you have hundreds of millions of dollars of these things piling up, what does that do to the creditworthiness of the city, its ability to fund its debt? You know, you say, well, that's not a Measure 37 issue, but that's a consequence we have to deal with. There may be a way to shape that order or shape that judgment so it would not impair the credit of the city. And I know that some people are thinking about bringing in something on that, but that came in late. I wouldn't want to preclude it because I think it's an essential proposition.
I think that's a valid point. Let's just try to focus the committee on the fact that this week we need by the end of the week to pretty well have things put together so that we can take a couple days early next week to get our finished product into the system, because I don't believe we have much more time than that. So with that, so we'll leave the door open on amendments. I think Representative Ackerman has a very valid point in that respect. And we want to keep the door open to good things as long as we can, but there is going to reach a point where we won't be able to take any more and just have to deal with what we have. So right now we have dash 2, dash 3, and dash 4. So with the dash 2s, I'll ask Bill Cross. Is Bill here? Okay. Bill, tell us, now the committee will not accept any amendments today, but we want you to come in to explain what your amendment is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Cross, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. Earlier this session, you passed out a bill, House Bill 2582, that would have allowed the use on farmers' land of a nursery with a landscape maintenance business as a secondary purpose to the nursery. This, unfortunately, went over to the Senate and didn't move out of the Senate Land Use and Environment Committee. Instead, was referred late last week to Senate Rules Committee, and there didn't appear to be any opposition to the bill. In fact, LCDC had some language suggestions to make. We went to LC Legislative Council with them, and in fact, the draft two amendments reflect that language that both landscape contractors and LCDC agreed to, which represent the intent of the original bill. Our concern being that Senate Rules has a multitude of bills over there, and this would be an opportunity to send this language that otherwise seems uncontroversial back over to the Senate.
Any questions of Mr. Cross?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. It really does strike me that if we create a Measure 37 fix in House Bill 3120, it's going to certainly be complicated enough and strange enough without turning it into the Christmas tree for every land use bill that didn't get through this session. And while I sympathize with that bill, and I remember voting for it, and it just seems to me we ought to be very cautious about adding on another 18 pages or something to a bill that's going to be otherwise very complicated.
Well, point. We're talking about it now, and again, at this point, we don't know how many of these we have coming, so we have to get a handle on that. Any other questions of Mr. Cross in regarding the Dash 2 amendments? Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Don Schellenberg, you submitted to the committee a possible concepts for amendments. Did you want to discuss that with the committee today? By the way, committee, we have exhibits K through X. Does everyone have those, or do I just have them? Yeah, I think it was with your packet that was covered with the yellow sheet today. Okay. Don, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. Listening to your discussion last Friday and having the same discussion among all members as well as all the members of the lobby, it's very difficult to determine what it was the voters really were saying when they adopted Measure 37. The fact being that only a very small percentage of those who supported Measure 37 probably have a claim, and yet a very large number of people voted for that measure. So what were they thinking about when they voted for the measure? That's another question. And none of those questions are we really able to answer with any kind of certainty. What we do know for sure is that the people passed it, and the obvious result of that passage was that they felt certain, some people at least, had been treated unfairly under the current land use planning laws. So in keeping with the concept of how do we implement Measure 37 and retain the intent of Measure 37, the only intent that I can find for sure is that people weren't treated fair. Some people weren't treated fair. And so what we're suggesting is the tract of record that was in Senate Bill 1037, we think that answers that question. Because essentially what it says is if whatever you could do with your property when you bought it, you can do now. Now, that's fair. And it's very simple. We would also suggest that not go through the Measure 37 claims process. You establish a tract of record, and then the people don't have to go through a very expensive, very extensive, complicated Measure 37 process. You simply make that a part of the statute.
Now, that's in 3120 at the present.
I believe it's not in 3120. It was deleted from 3120. The second thing, regarding transferability, we would support allowing that to be transferred to family members, the right to build after you have the tract of record provision, you obtain that. That could be transferred to a family member. Oftentimes what you heard was, number one, I bought a piece of property and I can't build on it. Okay, that takes care of the track to record the issue itself. Then it's also, well, I wanted to build something for my parents, or I wanted to build something for my children, so we will allow that transferability to family members as defined in Measure 37. And we think that makes things fair. What was in 3120 that we had great concern with is the issue of the separation of powers. And mostly that issue deals with the minimum lot size issue. Minimum lot size is what is in the statute. It may be also an administrative rule, but it is in the statute. And it provides that for cultivatable land, you have a minimum lot size of 80 acres, and for rangeland, you have a minimum lot size of 160 acres. And so to mitigate that issue, we would suggest that you change the state law to require each county to establish minimum lot sizes appropriate for various areas of that county that would protect the agricultural environment and infrastructure needed for farmers and ranchers. So that will give the counties the ability then to decide, well, what is the appropriate minimum lot size for, and it's going to be different in different parts of some counties. These counties have varying geographies. And so let the county decide what is the appropriate minimum lot size there. And then any other activity associated with that property division then, of course, would fall under the existing criteria because they would become the owner of a new piece of property at that point in time. The third thing that we were suggesting is for other Measure 37 claims then that would be allowed on farmland, we're suggesting that we provide financial compensation for those rather than a waiver. And those would be mostly conditional and permitted uses would be most of the other things that would that may have a Measure 37 claim. And the way we suggest paying that financial compensation for state claims against the state, it would be an income tax credit. And for claims against the county, it would be a property tax credit. In other words, that property owner then who had a Measure 37 claim other than a parcel division or other than a single-family dwelling, they would essentially, for some time, not be liable for property taxes or income tax until the value of their claim was paid. It's obvious, you know, financial compensation was obviously something that was a key part of Measure 37, yet it didn't provide for how that was going to happen. And it's obvious that no revenue measure is going to get through this body this year to provide for financial compensation either. So this is another way of providing financial compensation, and it would be over a long period of time, however long it takes to pay for that financial compensation. That will conclude my remarks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to give this explanation today.
Don, you transferred to family members only. Should you consider any kind of limitation, a cap as to how many years out, or would that go on ad infinitum?
Ad infinitum. We didn't put a cap on it, no, sir.
Any other questions, Mr. Schellenberg, Representative Anderson?
Don, did your people give any consideration to parcels that might have some open range or pasture land on it and some woodlot, where there's a mixture that homes could be placed outside of the farmable area and therefore allow homes, you know, other than, say, one for a tract?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the way we put this together, it would be a tract of record, so different than a lot of record. A lot of record, yes, is one home on each lot, a lot being an individual description, legal description, a tract being two or more of those in contiguous. Our people felt that the tract was a better option than the lot. In fact, our policy, we have some policy on the lot of record that would prohibit us from probably going that route at this time.
I guess what I'm really asking is, did your people talk about the placement of where the homes should be?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, no. I would be up to the landlord where they wanted to put the dormer.
Your interest is in maintaining open farmland as best possible. And it seems to me if we cut them up, cut up parcels into rectangles or square, it has no recognition of where the actual farming capacity could be taken, as opposed to actually allowing homes away from the open farm and maintaining the ability to build homes in the trees.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we would hope that people who own farmland, who buy farmland, recognize the valuableness of the farmland and wouldn't cite a dwelling out in the middle of a perfectly good piece of farmland. I know when I cited my house, we cited it in a corner, which actually was a wetter part of the property. We always had it in pasture because we couldn't grow other crops in it, and that's where we thought the site of our house would do the least damage to the farm operation. We hope that people who purchase these parcels, family members, if they transfer them to family members, would have that same sense of urgency.
I don't think you think like a developer, though.
Any other questions of Mr. Schellenberg? Representative Schellen.
Providing an applicant for land use under 37 accepts the right to build on a tract of record, he then relinquishes the right to build on lots of record. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sumner, that would be true for high-value farmland. Tract of record would run concurrently with lot of record. This bill would not replace the lot of record. Lot of record now, if you own the property before 1985, it's not high-value farmland, you can do that now. This would, however, preclude a lot of record on high-value farmland, just as it does today. We would not change that portion. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, thank you, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Perry, we may call you back any day, at any time.
If I could make one other comment, please, and I...
For now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I'm available, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. That's a commitment. That's, I'm wondering if I could ask Lane Chetterley, the director.
Of course you may, Mr. Chair.
I think we'd like and seek counsel from you in the areas as we embark on this task this week, those areas that you feel can be worked on versus areas don't go. Can you help us with that kind of direction? And I know.
Right between the eyes, right? Mr. Chair, members of the committee for the record, Lane Chetterley, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. If I may, Mr. Chair, I'll be general in my response today. As you may know, there are still conversations about development of further amendments to this, and I don't want to prejudice any of those discussions. I will say to you that from the department's perspective, as the department that is ground zero, I think, in the administration of Measure 37 claims, it is clear to me that the issues around claims administration and judicial review are of utmost priority. I would recognize that the policy statement that the voters made in November by a vote of 61-39 represents a policy decision that we're going to have to accept largely as done and spoken, and as much as there are those who would like to revisit that issue entirely and restore the status quo to what existed before November 2nd, I think realistically we have to recognize that we're moving forward and not going back.
So in terms of the measure, we see most importantly the issues of claims administration, judicial review. I believe that to the extent that in the negotiation, in the work of this committee, there is room to revisit issues relating to farmland protection. I think, Mr. Chairman, you have expressed an interest in that. We would support that wholeheartedly. Recognizing the importance of the agricultural economy to the state of Oregon. To the extent that that can be accommodated in the spirit of Ballot Measure 37, and still recognize the policy that the voters expressed, but at the same time provide some protections to maintain enough open space to continue a viable agricultural and forest economy. I think that would be a big win. We would be very interested in that. Obviously, the proponents of Ballot Measure 37 in their negotiations over any changes in the bill in the measure have raised the issue of transferability as being a key component. And so we recognize that as a practical matter, that in looking at larger amendments to the bill, that should certainly be addressed. I think those are, in the big picture, probably the most critical issues. Claims processing, judicial review, revisiting some reasonable protections of resource lands, farm and forest, within the spirit of the measure, and then the issue of transferability. My concern, Mr. Chair, is I think yours is as well, that the bigger this package gets, the harder it's going to be to move it. And I say that recognizing that there are elements that I would like to put on the package, of my own pet issues, but there is going to have to be some element of restraint, I think, in terms of how big this gets, recognizing that everything that somebody needs is something for somebody else to oppose. And so I would urge the committee to keep that in mind as well as you move forward. But there are, as you know, still conversations that I hope will come to the committee within the next few days, informed by the discussions and the testimony that you've had over the past several days, and then we would be prepared to look at this in detail and in specific.
Wayne, was the claims process as laid out in 1037, had you had a chance to look at that? What was your opinion of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pretty good. And I say pretty good simply because in the work to get 1037 into LC form and in front of the committee, I think there were technical issues that had not been addressed. I don't think they're controversial issues. I think the claims process and judicial review are pretty close.
Any other committee? Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as you know, you've been one of my mentors, and I listened very carefully to what you said, and I'm just listening very carefully to what you said now, which is important to me. You used two words. I mean, there were three concepts I heard. One is, this is the law of the land, and it is the law of the land. And then you talked about administrative matters that make the law of the land work better, and I don't think there's any controversy there. I think we're all pretty much about that. But then you started talking about the spirit of the bill and of the measure. And what's troubled me about this is the law of the land is the words and getting the spirit. As you know, we had how many volumes of Federalist Papers trying to figure out what the spirit of the U.S. Constitution was. That spirit is to a certain extent in the eye of the beholder. So it struck me that in a sense, whenever we do anything that expands the strict interpretation of Measure 37 as the words now are, and for example, transferability might be one of those things, and we may want to do that, but there ought to be some balance that then restricts the spirit, if you will, of Measure 37. And I'm just trying to grope for that, and I can't
having a lot of trouble figuring out how to.
I think putty pooper would be
or pooper scooper might have something to do with it too.
Mr. Chairman, you couldn't have said it any better. I think the elements that I laid out do implicitly recognize that balancing. I think to the extent that transferability is an express expansion of the words on the page in terms of what a claimant may be entitled to under the measure, then going back to your issue of balancing, then I think the question of looking at farmland protection may be the appropriate balancer to apply against that, recognizing that we're going to clarify, if this is the committee and the legislature's wish, we're going to clarify transferability, but at the same time taking an opportunity to revisit the potential impact of the measure on resource and productive agriculture and forest lands, and asking ourselves, was that really what the voters intended? I do empathize that what the voters intended is depending on who you ask or who comes to speak with you. Ultimately, I think that is within the purview of the legislature to determine that intent and take the best shot.
Mr. May I have a brief follow-up? One of the other balancing, that is, I think you're exactly right, a balancing. One other way to balance may be between the past and the future. I mean, it seems to me that I would be much more willing to have a more generous interpretation of writing events of the past and a more narrow interpretation of Measure 37 claims as opposed to future, and that's one of the other things I've been thinking about in terms of the balance, probably because of my interpretation of what I think the voters were thinking about past injustices rather than future impacts. I wonder if you have any feeling about that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenwood. Yes, I think that's, again, is a fair question of balance. In fact, it brings to mind one other issue regarding the potential address of the measure that is still under consideration that we would be supportive of, and it's akin to the farmland protection, and that is the issue of the impact of Measure 37 claims in and around urban growth boundaries, because that's an area where you can draw a distinction, and I think Senate Bill 1037 does, and I believe the dash one amendments, I think it was, the first set of amendments anyway, to Senate Bill, to House Bill 3120, also drew that distinction in and around urban growth boundaries between extent of rights in the past and extent of rights going forward. So that's a fair balancer, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wayne, any direction on the compensation issue, in your mind, from the agency?
Well, Mr. Chair, clearly, if money were on the table, I think, well, a lot of the issues that we're dealing with here would be a lot easier to deal with, because what the vexing aspect of this is the impact of waiver and the impact then of uses on the ground. Compensation would obviously resolve those. I don't disagree with the testimony you've heard. I think consistently that a new revenue source in this session for compensation, at least in terms of general fund, is a faint hope. We certainly would support the establishment of the compensation fund, and you've heard discussion about windfalls kind of fund, but I also have to be realistic in terms of the politics of the issue and where we are in the session and going forward with that. Mr. Schellenberg posited to you an income tax credit. Clearly that does not rise to a bill that would require a three-fifths majority in House and Senate, but we do recognize that still is a commitment of general fund revenues to the future, in the future, for the payment of compensation, because that would reduce general fund revenues to the state. So even that has its impacts. And just to give you an extent of what we're talking about, right now at the in the state we have on the order of about 520, 530 claims with over $1 billion stated right in the way of demand. So when you're talking about a compensation fund, that gives you the kind of target that you're looking at. It's not a small issue. Granted, those dollars have not been proved up, but it certainly gives you a sense of the magnitude, and because of that, the extent to the size of a compensation fund that would be required in order to make a real run at this.
And committee, in all fairness to Director Shetterly, we have no prior conversations today about Baines.
This is unrehearsed, Mr.
Director. Questions, and I apologize to the director for that. But I saw you back there, and as always, you are adept. As you were on the floor, you were adept right there behind that chair, too.
Well, Mr. Chair, I came full well knowing that if you saw me, you might want to call me up and talk about something. So it didn't catch me off guard or by surprise. And really, I aim to be a resource to the committee in the work that you are doing, and will continue to be available to you as you move forward.
Thank you very much. Let me see the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have two major amendments. That's the dash threes and the dash fours. I think, committee, you have just received a copy of the dash threes. Does everyone have a copy of the dash threes?
Yeah.
And I'll ask John Chandler and whomever wishes to accompany him to the...
Nobody.
Which is nobody.
Destroy my life. Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Homebuilder Association, here is sort of tangled on behalf of the Dash 3s, and I'm going to say that way because I just now saw them, as did you. I believe they are similar to what you turned in, but given the vagaries of the process, they may or may not be even related to what we turned in.
John,
there has been...
Would you want to wait till tomorrow that you've had a chance to go through
that? What I'm going to suggest, Mr. Chairman, is if we could wait. There are continuing discussions on these. As I think all of you know, there's been a group of us that have been playing around with this issue right after the elections when we started. We've been working with Senator Ringo on the Senate side. We hope to continue working with this committee, trying to come up with both a set of procedural and substantive fixes. And it might be more respectful of your time to wait, if we can, to get a more finished product in the Dash 3s. Big chunks of this are going to look very similar, very familiar to you, based on having been borrowed in the whole part from either 1037 or 3120 or both. For a detailed conversation, Mr. Chairman, I think that might be more useful. I would like to call, if you don't mind, though, having said that, some of the areas where these differ from the approach contained in the Dash 1s, I'm not sure what's in the Dash 4s, but it might be useful in terms of new conversations. These are more at 30,000 foot. One of the things that's in here, Director Shelley just mentioned briefly, is the urban inside of the urban boundary section and the urban fringe, as we've come to call it. The concern there in terms of inside of urban growth boundaries is a different effective or different application of Measure 37 inside UGBs than outside. That's part of a political process, frankly, in terms of the lowering the angst on cities for retroactive claims. Basically, what we're provided for is it applies to residential uses with environmental restrictions. Frankly, my reading on the results, the team leaders of Measure 37, that was, in terms of city folks, that was where most of the concern came from, with those sorts of restrictions. The urban fringe is slightly different, and for some of you, this will bring memories back of urban reserve discussions in years past. One of the things, particularly from a development standpoint, but also I think from a city standpoint, that's of concern in Measure 37 is if you have a lot of claims immediately adjacent to an urban growth boundary and they get subdivided into relatively low density, 5-acre, 2-acre parcels, it makes it really difficult to expand the boundary later. That's concern one. Concern two, with a lot of those areas, is in terms of the compensation or the claim presented by the property owner, if you're outside the urban growth boundary and can be brought inside the urban growth boundary and make your property therefore more valuable by making it urbanizable, that would take care of the claim as well. And so what we're trying to do here is to address both of those concerns, as well as the right of the property owner with the claim to get something for the fact that their property rights have been impaired by some regulation or another. There's a fairly lengthy discussion in the draft, as you'll see. The concept simply is outside of the growth boundaries with a space, there'll be a distance, a mile or 2 miles, within which the local government or metro, as the case might be, would try to figure out, essentially, we didn't phrase it this way, essentially what areas they want to study further for possible urban growth boundary expansion. And outside of that study area, claims would be to go forward. Inside the study area, frankly, they'd be put on hold. The idea there being not to impinge on future urbanization, but at the same time, they expect the rights of the property owner to have some economic benefit. That concept was in 1037. It was not in the 3120-1. We're bringing it back in these. One other thing that's in here that is not in 3120 or in 1037, frankly, and that's the idea of an interim discussion on some of these issues. There's a bill floating around this process, Senate Bill 82. You've heard reference to that in other contexts during the session. I'm not sure what Senate Bill 82 is at the moment physically. It descended down into the abyss of the Senate Budget Committee, and then assuming it comes out of there, it goes into the other abyss in the House Budget Committee. I think you have more than one abyss, I'm not sure that's technically accurate. But what we're comfortable, we have a little placeholder language in here, because I still think that concept's important. Our group still thought that concept was important. To have a bigger conversation, rather than doing technical fixes on Measure 37, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that Measure 37 occurred in a context of some dissatisfaction with the land use system, even if that dissatisfaction is ill-defined. And the only way to get at that is to have a conversation with ourselves as a state, as a society, what is it we're trying to do with the land use planning process. So there's some placeholder language in there that we would submit to you might be expandable or utile. The final thing you'll notice in the dash 3 is, I hope you'll notice, I don't think it's in here, is no conversation about the compensation piece. That's not because we didn't think that was important, but because we would like to have an emergency clause placed on this, and it's my understanding, although I'll defer to somebody smarter, that with you can't have a funding piece in an emergency clause legislation, so that would have to run separately. That wasn't intended as a scheme around the need for compensation package. It was simply to have two vehicles, one for an emergency clause could apply, the other for it would not. That, it was probably more detailed than you needed on something we're going to talk about, but I do want to highlight those areas of distinction as you go through discussion of the other amendments and amongst yourselves with regard to the bill. And with that, I'll touch and take questions, if there are any.
We need time to read it, too.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And the dash fours from Thousand Friends of Oregon. Elon?
I don't think we've gotten the dash fours yet, have we?
No, we have not.
There's someone else in the news after I was talking about this morning.
I think the dash fours are still over getting.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Elon Hassan, Thousand Friends of Oregon. We submitted the dash fours to the Legislative Council, and they haven't been produced yet. Mike Kohlmeier from our office, one of the attorneys and staff, is here and can kind of go over a preliminary outline. But if you prefer to.
We appreciate that very much. And then when we do get the dash fours, we'll have you back.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mike Kohlmeier. I'm a staff attorney at 1000 Friends of Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss with you the principles that are the basis of our proposed amendments to House Bill 3120. The first principle that we try to address is the principle of fairness, and as everybody tries to understand what the voters intended, I think it is pretty clear that they intended that land use regulation and the treatment of individual property rights be treated in a manner that's fair. And there has been a poll taken since the election, and I'm sure you are all familiar with it, that says Oregon's value both land use planning and individual property rights. And it's a strong statement of both values. So we recognize that land use regulations both restrict the use of land, but they also protect property values for all concerned, and therefore we would hope to be fair to those who have been restricted without being unfair to those that have been protected and have a right to continue to be protected. We also believe that since Oregonians value both land use planning and individual property rights, it is necessary to reform Measure 37 in a manner that would allow planning to continue into the future. And we believe that means that there should be some threshold established for the diminution of value before a Measure 37 claim is triggered.
Are these your amendments that we're just now receiving?
Yes, sir. Those are what we turned into Legislative Council. There have been some, there has been some coordination with Legislative Council that will slightly change some of that, but that is the last.
So the LC-2975 is yours. I just want to make sure that we're...
Yep.
LC-2975 is your document.
Yes, sir. You're looking at the document that John Chandler...
I think that refers to House Bill 3120-1, which were LC-2975.
Okay.
So I think that's right.
Yep. Good. So we didn't want to get them mixed up and have 1,000 friends on John Chandler's. You know.
We'd be happy to
remember the shirt. Has the asterisk note amendment?
No, the different is on
3120-1. That's correct, sir.
Okay, thank you. Chairman, proceed, please.
Getting back to the principle of establishing a threshold, which we believe is necessary to allow land use planning to continue into the future. In 1922, in a landmark regulatory takings case, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes observed that, and I will quote, "Government hardly could go on if to some extent values incident to property could not be diminished without paying for every such change in the general law." We believe that observation is valid. The cities and counties are required in the future to pay for every change in value for every law they pass. They are going to be reluctant to continue land use planning and land use regulation because they would not be able to afford probably would not be able to afford to pay for every diminution in value, and if the waiver becomes transferable and permanent, then every property to which a new regulation could be applied would get a permanent waiver, which means that they would be forever exempt from compliance, and that would make new land use regulation perhaps meaningless and futile. So we strongly encourage the incorporation of a threshold in Measure 37 to allow planning to go forward. We also believe, as others have indicated, that compensation is a fair way of providing remedy for landowners who have been unfairly restricted. But we also feel that reasonable use and reasonable regulation mean that in addition to it being appropriate to limit waiver rights in some manner, it is also a reasonable regulation that would allow some waiver rights to occur.
So did you have any recommendation in regards to a funding source for the compensation piece?
We are proposing in our amendments to make LC-3535 a part of this bill, and that has a funding mechanism based upon development rights assessments for land brought into the urban growth boundary. We also believe that proportionality is a principle of fundamental fairness, and we believe that the remedy should be proportional to the restriction or the reduction in value. And you'll see that we have added specific language that would require, prior to granting a Measure 37 waiver, a determination that the value of the use allowed does not exceed the amount of compensation due under subsection 2 of this section, and the use allowed does not significantly impair the use or value of nearby land that remains subject to the regulation or regulations being waived.
So it's very difficult for the committee without the dash fours in front of us to follow what you're saying. So I'm going to ask you to stop, if you will. Wait till we get a copy of the dash four so we can go with you through those dashes. And what I would just ask you, if you can give us an overview of what your amendments do and the issues that it addresses.
Mr. Chairman, I agree we will be ready to go through our amendments line by line at the appropriate time. Basically, as I indicated, our amendments propose a threshold to be incorporated into Measure 37. There is a specific proportionality provision that I have just read to you that is a requirement for the waiver. We're asking for deed restriction, or we're incorporating deed restriction provisions for a waiver, or in response to a waiver. And then we are suggesting that the high-value farmland provisions already in 3120-1 be amended slightly to include some of the provisions that were jointly suggested by the Department of Agriculture and Department of Land Conservation and Development to be added to Senate Bill 1037 while that bill was under consideration. Those specific provisions were not actually added, but they identify a basis for protecting rangeland that is based on a better measure of the value of the resource land, we believe, than the simple soil classification. Then we are recommending waiver limitations. On high-value farmland, we would recommend a tract of record in lieu of a Measure 37 waiver. In that regard, we would support what the Farm Bureau has suggested today, and that is a tract of record dwelling unit being a fair response to a vast majority of the Measure 37 claims.
Sir, as I have hopefully reminded everyone else who's testified here, we must produce something that is going to be accepted by both sides of this issue. And as I will not certainly admonish anyone in this regard, but this committee doesn't have a lot of time. Don't be too set in anything. Be ready to move and be flexible so that we can produce a document that's going to have acceptance by both houses of this legislature. That's our intent. And I apologize. I should have delivered the same speech to everybody who was before us today. It's going to be important that we come with an open mind. Please don't come in here with something you know doesn't have a damn chance of getting out of this building. You're wasting our time, and we don't have time to waste. If you're going to change Measure 37, don't bother coming back, okay? We're just not going to go there that we're going to change 37. We're not going to do it. But we want to work together to find what we can to make it work better, okay? Sorry I interrupted you.
Then, as I indicated earlier, we incorporate LC 3535 dated 5-12-05 to provide a compensation source. We have a provision taken from Senate Bill 1037 that requires the DAS to establish rules on appraisal and evaluation of property values. And that sort of is basically what our proposed amendments do.
Good, good. We look forward to going through them with you then. Elon, just let me know when you get them, and then we can schedule it for tomorrow or Wednesday, either day, so that we can sit down and go through these with you.
Awesome. As soon as I hear from LC when they're ready.
Great. That'd be great.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you both.
I think just to add one final thing, just to be clear, in terms of the waivers that we were suggesting for the different values of farmland, those waivers would be, those rights would continue on, they would be transferable in that sense. I just want to make that clear.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Ma'am, Chris, could you come up for a moment? Man, I had a note passed to me by a committee member that says, can we get a copy of the poll that the Oregon Business Alliance did?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. I could have that available tomorrow.
tomorrow. I have some, but I don't have, I have close enough copies. For the, how many do you want, and how wide distribution? I'll make that readily available.
I mean, just a copy for each committee member, please.
For the committee?
Yes.
I may have enough of them in my briefcase. I'm not sure, but I will check.
If not, please see Sammy.
Okay, I can do that. Okay.
Questions? Did Mr. Lundquist? Thank you, Lynn. Appreciate that. Harlan, did you have anything you wanted to speak to the committee on today?
Tomorrow.
Well, I'm quite sure when it gets to developmental rights, you'll have a comment to make.
No, you don't have to now.
I'm not going to get you up here.
I just want to review the Dash 3 amendments and I'll come back.
Okay. Does Ross sitting behind you want to speak?
No. I mean, I'm happy to answer any questions, but
anyone else that has an intended amendment for this bill?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Ross a question.
Ross, would you come forward? Representative Greenlick would like to ask you a question. You didn't get out of here fast enough.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ross Day, Director of Legal Affairs for Women's in Action. Happy to answer Vice Chair Greenlick's question.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick.
Ross, as you know, I'm still struggling with the question, do we read Measure 37 the way it is, or do we fix it? What's your sense on the balance? I mean, you feel pretty comfortable with it being as it is, and we'll work things out. I mean, how much give is there to get a compromise measure that will... That's what the Chair was talking about, making sure we have a compromise that people want. I mean, does that make a lot of difference to you, or are you all feeling pretty good with living with the words as...
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, the way we split up the work in our office, which is probably part of the reason why you haven't seen my pretty face around here, is Dave is spending most of his time here, and I'm in the courtroom. I had two arguments last week on this measure. I have my lawyer hat on. I still do, even though I'm in the building today. And being a lawyer and an advocate, my gut tells me that despite what Director Shadowley and Thousand Friends of Oregon and others might tell you about the issues of transferability and these other things, I feel supremely confident, as Mr. Willis did, that I can win those issues in court. And I do know that those issues are coming up. So, how I personally feel as an attorney advising my clients is, as far as I'm concerned, we're going to win those issues. The question then becomes, the frustration that I have from all of this posturing is that I don't think any one of these issues has any merit whatsoever. But I think anybody who says that they don't know what the voters are voting for is fooling themselves. I think it's pretty clear. And maybe that's just for me because I've received so many phone calls from Measure 37 claimants. But I think anybody who says, well, we don't know if they meant transferability, I find that hard to believe. Passing Multnomah County, where we ran Dorothy English ads, where clearly what the intent was to pass Measure 37 so she could sell divided property and give some to her kids and sell some of it for development. I think clearly that's what the voters in at least the metro area intended to do. It was to give her that right. Now, the suggestion by the Attorney General that the people didn't intend that, I think, I find that hard to believe. With that being said, politics being what it is, I understand that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, and if we can get a definitive answer on something like transferability, I understand the value of that. I applaud the efforts of Dave and the others in the group to try to come to some sort of reasonable compromise on this. But, my position with Dave has always been and will continue to be that in the event that we don't get something moving forward, I'm going to fight like hell to make sure that we clarify it in the courts. I would prefer, however, to see the legislature do something just to remove, because this cloud of uncertainty has been placed on purpose. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And anything that the legislature can do to remove that this fabricated cloud of uncertainty, I think, will help. Will only help the process as opposed to waiting for somebody in a black robe to make the ultimate decision. So if you guys can come up with a resolution that is consistent with what the voters intended, that helps remove the cloud that's been created by our opponents, I think that would certainly get our support.
Just an observation, I think that's very helpful, but your sense of certainty on what the voters wanted from listening to phone calls from claimants, I think we had about 2 million votes, and meant something over 1 million people voted for it, maybe 1.1 million people. Most of them aren't claimants, so.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, that's true. Most of them aren't. But I counted up, I did 74 speaking engagements during the campaign, not to mention all the telephone calls that I got. I know Dave did at least that many, if not more. I think if anybody knows what the folks were, I don't think there's been a question that I haven't been asked, and a story that I haven't been told. And the suggestion that others are making that somehow that the authors of the measure don't know what the voters intended when they pass the measure, I think it's ludicrous. I mean, I can't tell you how many thousands of people I spoke to and explained to them what the measure did, explained to them what the intent behind the measure was. Yes, I can't tell you what 1,054,000 Oregonians were thinking when they cast a vote. I can tell you what I was. That's about it. I can't even tell you what my wife was thinking. But I have a pretty good idea.
I don't know about that.
Anyways, I don't even know that she voted for the measure, to be honest with you. But that being said, I think myself and Mr. Honeycutt and others are more than qualified to sit here and tell you this is what the voters intended. And I think Dave is certainly qualified to be able to tell you if any amendments you make to Measure 37 are consistent with that intent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair? Thanks. If there's something that you believe that the voters intended that's not in the written record, either the language in the measure itself or some of the written materials about the measure, it would help me quite a bit in evaluating these amendment proposals if you could tell us what you do think the intention was. Now, I've read the measure, I've read all the record of the campaign, but I'm implying from what you've just said that maybe there's more that beyond the written record that we need to understand.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, well, I don't think there is. I think ultimately what it does is it comes down to a conclusion on how you're going to weigh the evidence in the record, if you will, which is what's going to ultimately end up happening if the legislature doesn't address some of these issues and the court does. I'm confident that our efforts during the campaign has established a legislative record, the requisite legislative record, to satisfy our media positions, both in terms of what you find in the voters pamphlet, what you find in the explanatory statement. We have we objected and we still object to the ballot title. Don't think the ballot title was accurate. And we're on record as saying that as well. Not to mention with the campaign literature and what our opponents were saying about the measure. I think you weigh all of that evidence, I think it supports certainly our contentions about what the measure is intended to do.
If I might follow up.
Follow.
I don't remember anything in that record, and maybe it's because it's a while since I've read it and I've plowed through lots of other words on this since then. Is there anything in your record that suggested that in addition to the words in Measure 37, in order to implement it in keeping in faith what you intended, that we need some other implementation language? claims processes, for example, have been part of what's been proposed in both Senate Bill 1037 and in this bill. Other clarifications, other things that you said during the campaign, well, yes, we know what we intend, but the legislature is going to have to do some follow-up implementation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I never, when I was, all I can do is testify to what I said out on the campaign. To the extent that that the issue of process was raised, I think we made it fairly clear, and I think you can draw this distinction between Measure 37 and Measure 7, and also what was said out on the campaign trail and what's in the record, that when Measure 7 was passed, the instincts of local governments was to adopt unbelievably onerous processes and $10,000 application fees, and subsection 7 is in the measure specifically to avoid that. To say, look, you can go ahead and adopt processes. It was intended that those would be internal processes of how Multnomah County will process these claims. Unfortunately, it's been destroyed into something else. We did recognize, however, that the legislature would likely adopt the process and present much the same way that we have uniform administrative procedures. Same thing for Measure 37 claims. Not necessarily making them mandatory, but certainly as at least suggestions and something for the state agencies to follow. Did we contemplate that the legislature would come in and tinker with it? Of course. I mean, it'd be dumb for us to say, no, we didn't. I mean, that's just the nature of legislatures. That's what you guys do, for better or for worse. But to suggest that, to think that we thought they'd come in and do a wholesale revision, I don't think we contemplated that at all.
One last one. You just referred to a wholesale revision. Do you consider either Senate Bill 1037 or any of these amendments to be wholesale revisions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, again, I haven't been involved in any of those discussions. I'm on page 16 of the dash three amendments, and so I don't know that I'm prepared to offer an opinion as to that, but what I heard from your previous speakers was what I would consider to be a wholesale revision of Measure 37. I think that is something, I think the suggestion that Oregonians didn't know what they were voting for, I think, is an insult to Oregonians, frankly. One thing I would suggest, just in terms of a compensation device, if you will, because our opponents are always saying, well, the first three words are governments must pay, they never tell you what the next three words are, or forego enforcement, but that be that as it may, you might consider creating a fund and allowing people to put their money where their mouth is and voluntarily contribute money to the fund. So if somebody is so concerned about it and they want to make sure people get compensated, allow them to write a check to the state of Oregon and fund this compensation fund if that's something that they're so concerned about, which seems to be put them on charitable checkoff on tax returns as well. Something they might want to consider.
Any other questions?
I can ask me about the Gorge case? Nobody?
I'm going to wait for Representative Smith to bring that up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee, tomorrow we meet at 1 o'clock. We have to be back on the floor at 3. 1:15, I'm sorry. 1:15 tomorrow. The Dash 3s, John Chandler, and the Dash 4s, Elon. Come, be prepared. We will work as long as it takes tomorrow to go through those two set of amendments. So, seeing no more before the committee, we are adjourned.